start the second Brachas Maaser today. The Bracha of Tchiyas Hameishim, which is sometimes referred to as Tchiyas Hameishim, sometimes referred to as the Bracha of Gevuros. The very first phrase in the Bracha is Atah Gibor La'olam Hashem. The Gemara in Megillah, Daf Yud Zayin Amud Beis, which we'll be referring to quite frequently, I think we already quoted it before, comments on the order of the Shemona Esrei, on why the Atzi Knesset HaGadola arranged the order in the way they did. And there, that Gemara, pretty much, or with some exceptions, gave the titles of the brachos. So, for example, here in the Art Scroll Siddur, they give a one-word or two-word title to each bracha. Avos, Gvuros, Kedush Hashem, Bina, Tshuva, Slicha, Gula, etc. Of course, you could arrive at the title on your own, but most of them pretty much come directly from that Gemara, because the Gemara is trying to discuss each bracha and discuss why it is where it is. So the Gemara there does indeed refer to this bracha as Gvuros. So a description of Hashem's might in the world. However, one cannot help but notice that the specific aspect of divine power that is mentioned the most in this bracha is the phenomenon of Tchiyas Hameishim. It's mentioned at the beginning of the bracha, Chayim Meishim Atah. It's mentioned in the middle of the bracha, Mechayim Meishim Rachim Rabin. It's mentioned at the end of the bracha, or in the middle again, toward the end of the middle, Mechayim Menot L'Sheni Afar, keeps his believability or his promise to those who slumber in the ground. And then at the end of that middle section there, Melech Memes and Mechaya, and in the conclusion, Ne'eman Atalachis Mesim, and finally in the Siyam, Mechaya Mesim. So, although there are other phrases, which we'll try to elaborate on later, that express Hashem's might in other ways, but Tchiyas Hameishim is clearly the main aspect of divine might that is focused upon in this bracha, which is why in certain sources this bracha is referred to as the bracha of Tchiyas Hameishim. If I'm not mistaken, I don't have the Gemara in front of me, so I don't want to misquote it, but I believe the Gemara in Tainus, when asking why Geshem,
that has Tainus, yeah.
It might be here. Why Geshem is mentioned in this bracha, so it refers to the fact that I believe that this bracha, it calls it the bracha of Tchiyas Hameishim, which would highlight that idea. Let's see if I can find it. No. So it's on the Gadata and Tainus says, Gadol Yom HaKshamim Yom Tchiyas Hameishim. Some have even that it's greater. I don't have time now to find it, but in certain sources, certainly at least in the commentaries in the Siddur, they refer to this Bracha Tchiyas Hameishim. If I'm not mistaken, you even have it in the words of Chazal. Either way, it certainly highlights Tchiyas Hameishim. Rav Schwab in his Shiurim on the Siddur, which was recently published under the title Rav Schwab on Prayer. In Hebrew, they translate it from the English into the Hebrew, called Eon Tefillah, I think. So he has an interesting pshat, both in terms of the introduction of the bracha and why Tchiyas Hameishim is the main theme of this bracha. When speaking about a broader theme of divine might and divine omnipotence. In the Chad Gadya, so you have a series, this is his analogy, a series of phrases where the cat eats up the goat, and the dog eats the cat, and so on and so forth. Chad gajah, chad gajah. V'asa shochet, v'shochat l'tura, that the shochet slaughters the ox, the malachamoves slaughters the shochet, v'asa kodesh baruch hu, v'shochat the malachamoves. The poem, although some point out, was written in kind of a fun way in order to keep the kids up, but according to many commentaries, is indicative of the constant historical process of one power taking over another, taking over another, taking over another, But ultimately, these are all pawns in Hashem's scheme to bring about to the final perfected world. So whatever powers there are in the world that overcome the weaker forces, but ultimately Hashem's running the show, as evidenced by the fact that the most powerful of the powers will in turn be destroyed by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But what Schwab just extracts from that poem, in the description of Asa HaKadosh Baruch Hu v'shochat l'malach ha-maves, is if you took a survey and you asked people, what is the most powerful force in the world? So of course, you'll get different answers. But on a more philosophical, a deeper plane, the most powerful force in the world, outside of God Himself, is death, because no one could escape it. No matter how mighty or glorious a nation is, or its leaders, no matter how high in the hierarchy of nations or of monarchs, Nebuchadnezzar or Alexander the Great or Saddam Hussein or President Bush or anyone who's in a position of leadership, or Warren Buffett in an economic realm, or Bill Gates, these are people with immense power and influence, but nonetheless they can't escape the great power of death. So the Chag Gadah points out that even that very great power is just a tool in the hands of the ultimate power. So Rav Schwab suggests that the way to read the first phrase is Atah Gibor Le'olam Hashem, you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, are eternally mighty, meaning you even overpower, ultimately, according to the tradition that teaches us that ultimately death will disappear, Bila HaMavis LaNetzach, and even as we'll see later, the very fact that there is belief in Hashem's ability to resurrect the dead means that, by definition, so he overpowers the power of death. So the bracha, in general, is really a statement of Hashem's gevura. The focus on Tchiyas HaMeisim is because that is the, if you will, the supreme power of nature over which Hashem Himself has control. So it's the best expression of Hashem's Gevura. And that's what he highlights, the idea of La'olam, meaning when we speak about a powerful one, overpowering a weaker power. So you overpower even the most powerful power, I'm repeating the same thing again, but in the world, ultimately. La'olam Hashem. After all of history is all done, so then even the power of death itself is overcome by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Of course, that is not meant to minimize or ignore all of the other aspects of divine glory in the world, but explains why that specific one is highlighted, because that's the force that everyone's afraid of, and even that's only a tool in Hashem's hands. Maves is referred to traditionally as being brought about by the Malach HaMaves, meaning it's an agent of God. It's an agent, just like there's a Malach Refuah, there's a Malach HaMaves. Exactly what the Malach HaMaves is and what circumstances he functions and so on and so forth, that's something that has been discussed by many. I'm not really so familiar with that topic. Certainly there are many Agadatists that speak about the Malach HaMaves' swords, and many very interesting ones are stories of Yeshua ben Levi, who was the Malach HaMaves didn't have any control over him, so basically before it was time for him to go to the next world, he gave him a tour of the whole world. And he said, give me your sword, because you're making me uncomfortable. And then he hopped into Gan Eden with the sword.
And then he made sure
he's not going to come out. And then Hashem says, no, you got to give back the sword, because that sword is good for the world. And the totality of that Agadah, at least parts of it, is certainly meant to be taken metaphorically. But nonetheless, the depths of what exactly that means, the concept of a Malach HaMaves, the concept of a sword of the Malach HaMaves, so on and so forth, is, I assume, deeply rooted in the Kabbalah, even though they say anytime you don't understand something, you can just blame it on Kabbalah. But the minute that you enter the realm of angels and exactly how the severing of the soul from the body takes place, so by definition, I think we could say with confidence, this is something that is not for the average person's knowledge. But nonetheless, we know that the very fact that our Chazal referred to the process of death as Malach HaMaves is indicative of the fact that this also is part of the agency of God, that He ultimately controls the whole world, including this very great power. We also know that sometimes the Malach HaMaves is not the vehicle of death, but the great tzaddikim, they die directly by God's hands. It's what Midrashim speak about it as Amisus Nishika.
So only Tzadikim? Of course, there are many people that die suddenly. Or don't
sudden death doesn't necessarily...
What is Nishika Hashem? I know someone that is just...
Nishika is a different, somewhat off our present topic,
okay,
I don't think that Nishika means sudden death. Nishika means, from the way the classic sources indicate, is where HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Shechina Kiviyachol comes down to the world and absorbs the Neshama, which leads to a much more painless death from the perspective of the Neshama. Because even if in the perspective of the guf, there seems to be a little pain. But the neshama, being severed from
the body,
is a very traumatic experience. So whereas the basic process is, again, according to the classic sources, is basically a force being sent down, a malach being sent down to take the neshama back. So that's a more painful process. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu absorbing the soul, that's less painful. So that Moshe and Aaron and Miriam was ochet to, and Yehuda Hanasi and so on and so forth.
Where does the concept of Kriyas HaMeitim come from? In other words, I once heard a source that said that the Chachamim created it, and started to expound it during the time of the first Beit HaMikdash. Where is the...
That's classic... historical scholarship that tries to minimize the role of the Torah Shebaal Peh in our religion, so they have statements like
where
that.
Where in the Torah is there a reference to it?
Right, so maybe we'll get to it, even though this bracha is not the main forum for that, but it's important to discuss it. It certainly is a good place to discuss it. Is this blanked out? I don't know if... But the most explicit Torah is the pasuk at the end of Daniel, where it discusses Rabin, Yisheni, Adma, Safa, Yakitu. So many of those that slumber the ground will awaken. It has many allusions in the Torah itself. And there's a massive discussion, which maybe we'll touch upon, as to why the Torah itself did not make the notion of Tchias HaMeitim more explicit. But it's a very good question. The most comprehensive work on Tchias HaMeitim that I saw so far, but I didn't really look high and low, is this volume they have in Keset Torah called To Live and To Live Again. It was printed by someone from the Chabad orbit, but which is not neutral, just pointing out that it's someone who printed it from the Chabad orbit. No agendas, just discusses Tchias HaMeitim. I think this was before the whole controversy. But it's very informative. It's one of the more comprehensive works. And also Rabbi Kaplan in the Handbook for Jewish Thought has a lot on the resurrection. But we'll touch upon some of them later. So in any case, the main theme of the bracha is divine might. Tchias HaMeitim is stressed because that is, the most powerful force of nature that in and of itself is just a pawn in God's hands. Rav Schwab goes further in his treatment of this bracha. And again, just summarizing his previous Atagi Barla Olam Hashem Achayim Meisim Atzal. How do we know that you are eternally mighty? Because you even overpower the power of death. Then we have the introduction to the middle paragraph. Mechal Kachayim Mechesed Mechayim Meisim Berachim Rabim. Somech Novlim Rofecholim Atasurim Mechayim Atzal Sheni Afor. So it seems like it's giving us a list of Hashem's powers. He provides life for the with kindness to the living. He resurrects the dead. He supports the fallen. He heals the sick. He unties the tied, which could mean literally or spiritually as well, meaning getting someone out of distress and also even just allowing them to move is also referred to as Matir Asurim. So Schwab suggests that this bracha is written very poetically, if you will. The middle section is roughly divided into two main sections. Mechal Kachayim Mechesed, Mechayim Eisim Berachim Rabim. He does kindness for the living, he does kindness for the dead. Mechal Kachayim Mechesed, we'll call that A. Mechayim Eisim Berachim Rabim, and he has mercy even on the dead, we'll call that B. Then the bracha elaborates on A and B. How is he Mechal Kachayim Mechesed? So Mechnoflim, Rofecholim, Matasurim. Those are examples of A. And then it elaborates further on B, meaning Mechaim Eitzim Rechim Rabim. How does it elaborate further? Mechaim Enosla Sheni Afar. Micha Mocha Valgarus Midam Alach. Melech Memes and Mechaya. Right, so interesting structure of the bracha. Simple pshat that it has an introduction. Chapter 1, chapter 2, and then elaborates in chapter 1, elaborates on the theme of chapter 2. There is a fundamental debate in the Rishonim. The most famous spokesman of this debate, although it's certainly not limited to them, is between the Rambam and the Ramban, as to how exactly Tchiyas HaMeisim fits into the grand theme of, or themes, of redemption, of the afterlife, of Olam Haba, and so on and so forth. This is a topic we dealt with more at length when we were discussing, Kohen Muna. I think we dealt with them. But in any case, just if we did, the brief review is certainly in order. And more or less, yeah, we definitely did it. I remember I gave out the photocopies and timelines and so on and so forth. The more popular approach in the Rishonim and the Achronim, and certainly this is what is what the sources say, is a simple implication of the Kabbalistic sources and the Hasidic sources, is that Tchiyas HaMeisim is identified with Olam Haba, meaning that Hashem created a human being that in the ideal world would be able to survive without the need to eat or engage in any other physicality, and that the perfect human being that is capable of receiving the highest form of divine pleasure, which is knowledge of God, is a body and a soul. It's a surprising idea, but this is what the Ramban quotes in many Midrashim and many implications of even certain psukim. So Olam Haba, which is the afterlife, meaning the eternal world in which one receives divine pleasure, so the greatest form for that is a perfected body with a soul. And it's a body that doesn't need to eat to survive. That's what again, to take us a little far afield, but that's why the certain Midrashim that speak about in Olam Haba are eating man. What does man have to do with anything? Like, for example, Moshe Rabbeinu says that Shabbos Hayom. Hayom lo simsu basodah. You're not going to find man in the field today. So the Medrash makes a diuk. On this Shabbos, Hayom, this kind of Shabbos, you're not going to find man in the field. But in the ultimate Shabbos, which we say in the davening, Yom Shekulo Shabbos, which is reverence to Olam Haba, then you will find man. What does one have to do with the other? So man, we know, is not, you know, just Wheaties in the sky. It's it doesn't have a nutrition label. If you looked at the nutrition facts of man, it would say pure ruchnius. Ultimately, we survive based on Hashem's kindness. So man is just, if you will, like the... it's Hashem's radiance put into a physical form, if you will. Something like that. I don't know what these words mean, but the Midrashim is speak about Malachim eating man. What does that mean? So, similar idea. Any other being outside of God to exist has to be that Hashem has to give it batteries. So the physical batteries, if you will, the most direct physical batteries are expressed by man. In the world we live in, so it's through a whole series of facades. Right, we eat food, and there's nutrition, and so on and so forth, and that rejuvenates the cells, and that's what allows the soul to continue with the body. But on an ultimate plane, all it is just a show. And the way we live is because Hashem wants us to live. In this world, so we can't outsmart the system. We have to go through the what we call nature. But ultimately, it's all straight from the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's why when Moshe went to Har Sinai, what's notable about his stay there? He didn't eat. But he was human. Yeah, but he was plugging in to direct HaKadosh Baruch Hu's will that he should exist. And in that world, is a world of Torah study and a world of each according to their own level that they earned in Olam Hazeh, of absorbing Hashem's knowledge, which is the most supreme pleasure of them all. So how do you get to that world? So in order to get to that world, originally the plan was that Adam HaRishon was going to be placed in Gan Eden, and then hopefully he would pass the test of the Eitz Hadas Tov Hara, and then he would immediately enter into the Olam Haba world.
The next Shabbos.
But that didn't work. So then Hashem introduced a concept called death into the world. And what is that concept of death? That allows the body to disintegrate, and then to await its recreation at the right time and place, so that it can once again be rejoined with its soul in a more perfect way to get back to that Olam Haba. Part of the problem of the new existence is, well, what are you going to do with the souls in the meantime? So they're not just going to go to jail till the world awaits its perfection. So the soul goes to a place called Gan Eden Shalmaila. That's what is sometimes commonly referred to as Olam Haba, but really is not quite Olam Haba. Meaning when a person dies, they go to a temporary world of pleasure, which is the upper worlds of the souls. And the souls there basically await their ultimate destiny, which is the afterlife, which comes at the end of world history. After Geula, after Mashiach comes, and after whatever period Hashem has for that world of Olam Hazeh, of Geula, to play itself out, then Hashem says, okay, now it's time to bring all the souls that earned reward throughout those eras of history back to the world, recreate the world. Again, there's a lot of spooky stuff here, but many Midrashim speak about the fact that at that point, the whole world as we know it will also have to be recreated to allow for that more blissful existence. It won't be it'll be a physical world in the sense it'll have physicality to it, but the people that are going to live in there are not going to have to eat and drink. So obviously it's going to be a massively kind of different world than we're used to now. And that's what we speak about. 6,000 years the world would exist, and then there's a medrash that says in 1,000 years it'll be desolate, and then it'll be recreated for the Yom Shekulo Tov. So in other words, for the Ramban, Olam Haba is ushered in by the reunification of body and soul, which we call Tchiyas HaMeis. For the Rambam, Maimonides, that's the Ramban, Nachmanides, and that seems to be the majority approach. For Maimonides, Tchiyas HaMeis has nothing to do with Olam Haba. Olam Haba is the world of the soul. It's where you go after you die. In other words, for the Ramban, discussed before, where's Olam Haba now? It doesn't exist yet. The world yet to come. What does exist now for the Ramban is Olam Hazeh, and a soul world. Well, you got to give that soul world a name, so he calls it either Olam HaNeshamos or Gan Eden Shamayla. You're not going to call Olam Haba, because Olam Haba is literally Olam Haba. It is yet to come. It's not here yet. Again, we mentioned this before, but let's say in the davening, at the end of Olam Tzion, we say Nizke, V'nichye, V'nire, V'nire, Shtov, V'racha, Chaye, Yemos HaMashiach, sounds like that comes after Yemos HaMashiach. Yeah, it's not an absolute proof. You have it even more explicit, let's say, in the Menucha V'Simcha, Zemer on Shabbos. Yeah, it's not a primary source, really, but obviously written by great Rabbanim who were just plugging into our Masorah. The Ziyas Goel, L'chaye Olam Haba. Meaning somehow the process of Geula and following that is Olam Haba. According to the Rambam, Olam Haba is right here. Not in Olam Hazeh, but it exists in parallel. It's a parallel world. Existed all the way from the beginning of creation, awaiting the death of the first man to enter into that Olam Haba world. That's why the Rambam, very much L'shitoso, he doesn't really have this approach of had Adam not sinned with the Eitz Hadas Tov Ra, that he never would have died. He doesn't have that whole approach. He would have lived a very long life, and then, I don't know, died al pi neshika, you know, like Moshe Rabbeinu did. And then, as a result of his actions on this world, entered into the next world, which he calls Olam Haba. So that's why, for the Rambam, so where does Tchiyas HaMeis fit in? What do you need it for? It seems like it's almost cruel. I'm already there in Olam Haba, so why do I come back down here? For the Ramban, I understand why I got to come back down here. That's my main reward world. That's what I've been slaving away for in Olam Hazeh. But for the Rambam, once you're ready in that blissful world of Olam Haba, why come back down? That's one of the reasons, amongst others, why the Rambam was accused of denying the whole notion of Tchiyas HaMeis. But he didn't. So he writes a whole letter defending his position. He clearly agrees with it. In the Mishnah Torah, he only writes about it one time. Short and sweet. One who denies Tchiyas HaMeis is a heretic. That's all he writes about Tchiyas HaMeis in the Mishnah Torah. The other thing he writes is that the Mashiach does not have to resurrect the dead in order to be proven to be the Mashiach. So somehow, they said, the fact that you mentioned it once, not good enough. You have to make a bigger deal about it. That's what the Rambam defends himself, and he says, what do you want from me? He says, truth is no less truth and no more truth if it's repeated exactly once than if it's repeated 1,000 times. And falsehood is no less falsehood if it's repeated 1,000 times or if it's just said once. Just because you repeat yourself again and again and again doesn't make something false true, and just because you don't repeat yourself again and again doesn't make something true false. So I said it. There you go. Chiyas HaMeisim exists. If you don't believe in it, you're not Bikaris. What do you want me to say about it? Oh, I know what you want to tell me. You want me to write, if you had 2 wives in this life, who are you going to be married to? You want me to write what color clothing you're going to have when you get back? You want me to write how tall are you going to be? You want me to write, are you going to look like a 20-year-old, a 30-year-old, or like the second that you died, or like a baby? So you say, you know what, says the Rambam? I'm not interested in that. Hashem will decide. For me, the fundamental truth of Tchiyas HaMeisim is the more important idea here. So just to finish this nekuda up, so the Rambam definitely agreed to, that there is such a thing called Tchiyas HaMeisim, but what do you need it for? So he doesn't say. But what he does say is that it will occur within the period of Geula, of Mashiach. People will come back down, tzaddikim, who merited such a second coming down to the world, and they'll die again after a long life. The Rambam writes, Mashiach will die, and his son will reign after him, his son will reign after him. How long will Olam Hazeh last for the Rambam? So he writes in the Mora, as far as I'm concerned, it could be forever. But Chazal say that the world's only going to survive for 6,000 years. That might be a Das Yochid. The Rambam is very consistent with his position, so you put all of the sources in the Rambam together. Tchiyas HaMeisim is a temporary revisit to Olam Hazeh, so that you could die and go back to Olam Haba, because that's the world of reward. So what are you doing back down here again? Doesn't say. So the Ramban, being intellectually honest, trying to defend the Rambam, even though he argues in his position, says that's another opportunity to do mitzvot, because you could only earn reward in Olam Hazeh. So Hashem takes those tzaddikim, who did a pretty good job the first time around, even though you could have said the other way too, but he gives them a chance to do even better. That's what he writes. The Gemara has such a statement, that Tchiyas HaMeisim is only tzaddikim.
There's a concept that if you didn't do what you're supposed to do, you're recycled.
Rambam doesn't discuss Gilgal at all. He doesn't discuss it. And whether he agrees with it or not, I don't know. But as many students of mine pointed out when we discussed this, that idea of the Rambam's Tchiyas HaMeisim is similar in concept to the Kabbalistic idea of Gilgal, but with the difference being that Gilgal in Kabbalah is a lot of times for Rishayim, although not exclusively. Sometimes for Tzaddikim to fix an even greater Nakuda that they didn't necessarily do the first time around. And Tchiyas HaMeisim is, as the Midrashim themselves say, for tzaddikim. So what we dealt with in the past is the following question that can be raised against the Rambam. A fundamental issue. For the Ramban, Nachmanides, I know why Tchiyas HaMeisim is very important, because we believe in an afterlife. So that afterlife is expressed by the notion of Tchiyas HaMeisim. But for the Rambam, let's say you deny Tchiyas HaMeisim. So you're a fool. So you're denying a truth. But in the Rambam system of Ikari Emuna, he doesn't have every single true idea, if you deny it, that you're labeled as an apikoros, which has many ramifications. You can't be part of a minyan, and so on and so forth, not part of Klal Yisrael. So why did he pick that truth of Tchiyas HaMeisim to be an Ikari Emuna? So the truth is, the Rambam didn't pick it. It's a Mishnah. It's one of the few notions of Ikari Emuna where the Mishnah Sanhedrin says, the one who denies the resurrection is labeled as a kofir. But still, in the Rambam scheme of things, why should it be an Ikar HaMunah? So once again, he doesn't say. Let's imagine the world without Tchiyas HaMeisim for the Ramban. That means there's no eternal afterlife in the scheme of things. Of course, there'll be a soul world, but the final goal is Olam Haba. Let's imagine a world without Tchiyas HaMeisim for the Rambam. That means there'll be Olam Hazeh, there'll be an Olam Haba, there'll be a world of Mashiach, and people won't come down for a second chance. So that's pretty much the same. It's more like just a detail. So I believe, and I don't remember where I saw this, but I subsequently saw that some contemporary writer on the topic also marched into this same approach, that the Rambam in his letter, where he defended his approach to Tchiyas HaMeisim, seems to say the following. Why would one deny Tchiyas HaMeisim? Because it's bizarre. What do we mean by bizarre? It doesn't make sense. What do you mean? You're going to take dust, and you're going to put them together and create a life? But we're dealing with a Ribono Shel Olam here. So why would you deny Tchiyas HaMeisim? Granted, we have a Masorah concerning Tchiyas HaMeisim, both at least to some extent in the Torah Shebichtav, And certainly the Torah Sheval Peh. So we have such a Masorah. Why would you deny it? Why would you declare it to be irrational? Because, you know, even God can't do that. So what are you doing by denying Tchias HaMeisim? You're minimizing Hashem's Gevura. And you're saying, yeah, you could operate in the world as it is, but you can't recreate a human being. How could you do that? So in other words, you're minimizing Gevura. So for the Rambam, Tchias HaMeisim is ultimately reaffirming our belief in Hashem's omnipotence. It's a specific example of the fact that Hashem is a Kol Yochel. So, what has been suggested is, even the Ramban, who has a different notion of how Tchias HaMeisim plays itself out, but he also agrees to that point, that Tchias HaMeisim certainly expresses Gevura. So that's this bracha. Atza Gibor L'Olam Hashem, it's the bracha of Gevuros, speaks about Hashem's might, and the specific example that's highlighted is Tchias HaMeisim, which for the Rambam, presumably, is exactly why it's an Ikar Emunah, because the fact that it expresses Hashem's Gevura makes it into one of the Ikari Emunah. Okay, I think we'll pause here, even though we're late, and maybe next week we'll broaden a little bit into this Makor.
It might be very similar to what he was saying.
No, what do you mean?
So that's why he said.